everybody. I'm Joe Padavina.
And I'm Pastor Keith.
And I'm David Moody.
And this is One More Thing, where we dive deeper into reality's latest sermon. This sermon was called Purpose, and it's part of the Becoming Me series. Keith, you want to go ahead and give a recap?
Yeah, so brief recap of Lance's message was he was talking about us and having a purpose. I think sometimes people get in a rut of just living life 6 days a week, coming to church on Sundays, and not really understanding what their purpose is. And maybe they get further on even in their life and they're like, what's the purpose of my life? So this sermon really focused on that. He really drove home the fact that, you know, we are the church. And I use the capital C there. All believers are the church 7 days a week, not just coming to the building, the church on Sundays, but getting out there and living your purpose every day, a greater purpose. And so whatever, and this really tied into our work, tied our work into our faith too, and which is an interesting topic. I'm hearing it all over the place lately, so it was actually a very timely topic, I think, to say that a lot of times we look at our work as completely separate than our faith, but they are actually very tied together. And so we're going to explore that a little bit today in the questions. So whether your work is staying at home, taking care of kids, or taking care of kids and working, or building engines, or plumbing, or high tech, or whatever, wherever you work at, that is very much a part of your faith and should not be a separate walk from your faith. So the sermon talked about that and talked about how to find your purpose specifically. If something interests you or something irritates you, and you're like, well, what should we do about this? And the answer is, well, maybe God's talking to you about doing something about that. Maybe it's something that you're here for. Mm-hmm. We have a purpose as a church. We have a purpose as the church, as believers, to do work until Jesus comes again. And so why not do what God is putting on your heart as something that irritates you that you need to deal with or do something about? And maybe that's where you should be finding your purpose.
That was good. All right, we're going to go ahead and dive right in. So actually, the first question here is from a stay-at-home mom. So as a stay-at-home mom, I feel so deeply entrenched in parenting. I'm tired and feel like my cup is empty by the end of the day. But I do have other passions and desire to serve in other capacities at some point. Can you speak to the calling of parenthood and motherhood? It's hard to feel like you're contributing much when you have to say no so often to so many things.
Man, that's, I think we've all been there as parents. As a father, I got three little ones. I think we've all been there in that moment of, am I doing this right? I'm saying no a lot. I'm not saying yes a lot, but I think we all have different seasons as well. And the stay-at-home mom, this may be the season for just raising her kids. And later that season will change to maybe working at a school. Maybe it's getting into something else, but I think we all have different seasons and God helps us kind of through those seasons as kind of we move forward. What I would suggest is maybe do something maybe within the church, serve somewhere else, greet, maybe be a greeter, help with the coffee. I would also suggest having a mentor or someone that you can talk adult conversations with rather than just having to talk about Bluey and different things all day long. Because I think you need that. So me personally, I've recently moved to a full-time work from home job. I'm very extroverted. However, I set up lunches with friends and we talk anything and everything. So I still have that interaction. I know it may be tough depending on the ages of the kids, but it kind of depends. You need to be very intentional about some of those conversations and meetings that you have.
Yeah. A great answer, Moody. And we need to do lunch because you and I love wings. So
yes.
I'm a work at home guy too. So, absolutely. I think, and I'm going to generalize here a little bit that women, because they are responsible for childbearing and tend to be the nurturing aspect of the relationship, tend to have a purpose for a period of time in their life, and that is raising children. And there is no greater purpose than to prepare them children to go out in the world. So it is amazing work. It is valuable work and often, I believe, thankless work. But thank you for doing it. It would be my approach to that. And I know that, you know, in our family, my wife has just now kind of reached a point where we're on our last two teenagers where other ministries are part of her life. And so I echo what Moody said. It's, you are probably busy doing the best thing you possibly can do. I know it's the best thing you possibly can do right now. And I would just say the only thing I would add to it is make sure you don't lose yourself in that whole process, because there will be a season after kids that you'll need to make sure your relationship with your husband is good and all that. So, you know, like whatever you can do to make that bedtime routine work and get those kids to bed at a time where you and your husband can spend time together and maintain that relationship and have your date nights and those sort of things. Mm-hmm. That would be my encouragement, because you're already doing a whole lot of purpose raising kids.
Mm-hmm. I also work from home and my wife is a stay at home mom. And I know that she has felt this way in the past. I think what Moody said about connecting with other adults is critical. So this person didn't necessarily say, well, I guess they did say that they're struggling and feeling tired. So I would encourage you to find a babysitter on a regular basis and meet with people of the adult age.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
So, all right. Do you think we can at times overthink our purpose, that we hinge so much weight on the job title or posturing and positioning that we never even see what's right in front of us each day?
Absolutely. So we, in my life group, we actually discussed the sermon last night. And so we were able to kind of dive in some of this. And some people were saying, man, kind of what's my purpose? And I think a lot of times we equate purpose to job title, to status. But sometimes our purpose is just being there, being present for those who need it. It can be the little things. Sometimes they feel maybe mundane, but yet that can be our purpose, to being an outlet for those around us. But I don't think that our purpose is wrapped up in a job title. My purpose is I'm a child of God.
Amen.
That's who I am. And ultimately what it came down to is someone said, hey, at the end of the day, I'm a kingdom laborer. And what does that look like? Okay, no matter what your job title changes throughout the years or even throughout the day. So I work in IT. So I put on my IT hat. And then later I take that IT hat off and I'm a dad. I'm a husband. But at my foundation, at my core, I can be a kingdom laborer and doing things for the will of God and to enhance the kingdom no matter what I'm doing. And it doesn't really hinge on the different letters behind my name, if there are any. But my worth is being a child of God.
Yeah. I think that's exactly what I was going to say. My title is child of God and kingdom labor, doing God's work. I knew very early on in my life that God made very clear to me, Keith, you will not be in full-time ministry. You will always have a job besides being minister and I did that volunteer for a lot of years, and I still am. You know, still do a lot of volunteer work here at church in addition to my responsibilities as pastor. So it is not about title. And you're right. If you're focused on that, then you're focused on the wrong thing. The whole purpose of this sermon is to bring to light that you have a purpose, and maybe that purpose is in the business world or in the mechanics world or the raising children world or whatever it is right now. And make sure that when you leave church, you're being the church all week. It's not just that. I mean, you're right. And I mean, people at my work know when they're having a tough time. I mean, they're like, hey, Keith, can you huddle? And, you know, we talk through it and help them. So I think if we set that example of being Christ in the world and in our business and being excellent at what we do. I mean, when I sit down at my work, I invite God in and I'm like, look, I don't know the answer to this one, God. You're going to have to help me with this. So, you know, and he answers every single time. So it's, yeah.
I'm somebody that historically has bounced jobs frequently, simply because I didn't find value or purpose in those jobs. And when I finally got my most recent job is when I finally connected that I'm looking for satisfaction in the wrong place.
Right.
And this, you know, I'm 39 years old now, so it took me 30 something years to figure this out. And so I am one of those people that consistently has looked at job title and you know, acronyms behind my name on something that I value. And similar Lee, yeah. I work in technology, and until recently, I just felt like I was just spinning in circles. And then I've got this job, and now I God has put me in a position of kind of overseeing and helping others in their careers, and something that I have spent so many years trying to find myself, and now I'm in this position helping others, is so satisfying. And it really was like reflecting on what God had put in front of me, which is kind of what this person said.
That's awesome. That's good though.
Yeah. How do we know the difference between how God designed us and what is a symptom of a fallen world? For example, sociopaths, narcissists, and other neurodivergent people.
Can you repeat that one more time?
How do we know the difference between how God designed us and what is a symptom of a fallen world? For example, sociopaths, narcissists, and other neurodivergent people.
Well, I think off the cuff, when God created man, he created them perfect. Adam and Eve lived in a perfect world until the fall. And I think some of those other things are because of the fall. And we are an image of God, and God does not make mistakes, but also we also have free will. So we can make some choices that are probably not the right choices to make because we do have free will in that. Again, Adam and Eve, they chose to eat of the wrong apple. So I think how we're made in the image of God, in a perfect image, but yet because of the fall, we are actually born into sin as well. And so that's kind of just off the cuff. Keith, I would love your insight on this as well.
Yeah. So it is a known fact that those neurodivergent people, you're talking about sociopaths, psychopaths, are about 3% of our population at any particular time. They almost never get above 4% of our population, and there's real trouble when they get above 5% of our population. So that's a reality. So you have to be a pretty special person to be in that group, I would say. And there are people in that group, and they learn to use that that personality for power and those sorts of things. So I think that if you feel like you're like one of those 5%, I'd go get some help. But reality is you're probably not. You're probably just a normal old human with normal old wants for this, to control over this, control over that, and the sorts of things that humans tend to struggle with. So some of those things, and I guess underlying message I'm hearing in here is like maybe you're the kind of person who really leans into power at work or something like that. I can't exactly figure out what angle you're coming from, but like so I would say here's what you're looking for. You're looking for, in Latin, you would call it your summum bonum, which is the greatest good. The greatest good, you can define that however you want to, but eventually you find out that the greatest possible good is to live a life styled after Jesus, to become Christ-like. And so if you're like trying to manipulate to power, manipulate to all this other kind of stuff, you're not, you're kind of using your power for evil instead of power for good. Not that there isn't purposes for power and all that, but if that's your end goal, is to be powerful, to have the title, to control people and all that kind of stuff, then you're probably mm-hmm. not one of those 3% neurodivergent, but you are not also not going towards the greatest good. You're going headed towards the greatest bad, right? So that's how I would talk about it.
No, that's good. Yeah. How do you help your spouse realize their God-given purpose, that they have so much to offer and they can serve God, but they can't quite see it and they can't quite see what you see?
I think you just have to reaffirm them every day. I mean, sometimes I have to reaffirm myself, but if we see those big qualities in our spouse, talk about it. Talk about how they're using them for the kingdom or how they can use them for the kingdom. Make it a open conversation and just talk through it. And hopefully it's out of love because you've been with them for however long and you've decided to take this journey of marriage with them. But hopefully they will appreciate that as well, out of love and respect that, hey, I see this quality in you. Man, you would do such a good job here. And I think you can build them up and just kind of give them guidance and just Because you see it in them every day. Sometimes it's very difficult to see the same thing in your on you. I mean, if I have a piece of broccoli or whatever in my teeth, I can't really see that. But it takes someone, a true friend, to point that out, because not everyone's going to point that out either. It takes a true friend to point that out and say, hey, you got something between your teeth.
Yeah.
And so we may be so busy trying to, or they may be so busy trying to figure out what to do next that they can't see some of their potential, some of their qualities.
Yeah, I think that's great. That is one of the benefits of a marriage relationship, is that you're there to help each other out, to help rough some of the sharp edges off, and to help people see their potential. I agree with all that. I found in my life that if I want somebody to continue a behavior, or like anytime I catch them doing it, I say something positive about it. And if I want them to stop a behavior, I ignore it. Right. And you can teach people how to kind of move that way. But I'd say just be really supportive. And it sounds to me like you're on track with this, but like, you know how you have a true friend? If you say something bad, they're with you. When you say something good, they celebrate with you. Right. Mm-hmm. So I'd say be that for your spouse. And that's for everybody. Be that for your spouse. Celebrate with them when they're celebrating, and be there for them when they're not doing well. And just gently encourage, even if it's just saying, hey, that was awesome. That was cool. You know what I mean? Like, say a real positive statement about stuff, and it encourages them to continue doing it. So
I'm an introvert for the most part. And I struggle with going into unknown situations. It's not a control thing for me. It's more just, I'm more comfortable going into something that I know. I think most of us are.
Yeah.
But I would say for this individual, like if my wife sees something in me and she knows I'm mostly an introvert, if she's willing to put herself in that uncomfortable situation with me, it helps me tremendously. So being by my side, going into whatever value I'm trying to add to the world, even if it's not for the long term, just getting me comfortable into that position so that I feel comfortable doing it myself going forward, I think helps me a lot. Maybe it would help this person as well.
Yeah, that's great, because you can even say, hey, let's do this together.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Rather than walking it alone. No, let's do this together. I think that's huge. That's awesome.
Well, yeah. I mean, thinking even for me, like, I've been very focused on my work, and my wife about a year ago started suggesting we go down to the pantry on Tuesday nights and serve at the pantry as a family. And it wasn't my first thought about what to do, but I tell you what, you can't pull me away from there on Thursday nights. Mm-hmm. Now I want to be there. So yeah, I like that idea of bringing them along. That's a great idea.
Well, that's fun.
Yeah.
I've gone through a lot of pain and hurt. I'm worried I never see God's purpose. What should I do?
I would say, kind of going back to the same question, you need someone to help you through this situation, this pain and this hurt. If you don't have a life group, find someone who you can talk to about this. Find someone you can share this hurt with. And someone who can pray with you. Because sometimes I feel you may not even know what to pray. And if there's so much hurt, you may not know what to pray. But have someone on your side, someone you can go to, that's going to speak life and truth into your life and into this. And we all have hurt, but I know sometimes it feels like it piles up and piles up. And you can't see your purpose in that. So put some Christian believers around you who can speak life, can speak truth, and again, walk through this with you, not just, hey, I'm praying for you. You know, like, you want people to kind of get in the mud and get in the yuck with you and work through some of that.
Yeah, and I think I would take a slightly different spin on that. That is valuable, and I think you're absolutely right. You need somebody in your life who you can talk to, who you can be open with, who you can trust and have those conversations with. I have found in life that the definition of miserable is to be focused on yourself. Mm-hmm. And I'd say that you'd be amazed at how much better you feel getting out and doing things that you're not comfortable with, getting out and doing things with other people, focusing on other people. The moment anybody starts focusing on themselves, that's just misery, and it's only going to get worse the more you focus on yourself. I would say don't stop it. Go right now and get out there and do some things for somebody besides yourself and stop focusing so much. And I'm not saying you don't need to heal. I'm not saying you don't have situations like that, but I think that a lot of people let how I feel be an excuse for not doing anything. And that's the complacency that humans tend to lean towards. And so I would say you'll be happier and you'll have better experience in life when you're doing things for other people. And I can tell you what, I can give you recommendations. Go down to Heartland Hope Mission, serve on Tuesday nights, Saturday mornings, whatever. You will feel outstanding after you do that.
So that's good. I like both of those answers. This is my question, and Keith, it kind of counters your last comment.
Okay.
So I look at it as there are so many right things to do. You know, there's the right way to be a husband, the right way to be a parent, the right way to be a brother, a leader. It often feels overwhelming. So I believe that through knowledge and wisdom, God gives you kind of the ability to discern right and wrong. And there are so many right ways to do things that it's overwhelming at times, especially when you have significant events going on in your life. How do I continue to be a good employee? How do I continue to be a good brother, a good friend? Those types of things.
Okay, so everybody's looking at me. I'll give it a shot. Okay, so I find that no matter what your personality is, you're successful in life when you're humble. When you're looking for ways to do things, and there's, you know, a couple more of things like that, right? So there's some foundational things you can do, but it all starts with humility. And I struggle with perfectionism in this. So I'm trying to figure out where you're coming from on this. Like, it feels like you feel like you might have to perform for something, or it sounds like you might feel like you have to be perfect at everything. And I'm going to tell you what, if you come at everything with humility and just the willingness to change, it just changes your life. I mean, I'll tell you something that made a huge change for me, and it seems really weird. I read this book, Humble Inquiry, and it changed me from having conversations with people where I was just waiting for them to finish talking, and I'm getting to a point here, so just give me a little bit of a second here. It changed me from having conversations with people, I can't wait till they stop talking so I can tell them what I want to say, to let me listen to this because together – you might have some information that I need that will completely change my life. And so I want to hear everything you have to say and make sure I understand it and have a conversation based on the two of us getting to a point together rather than you hearing what I have to say. So that changed my thought process from you know, having to like always be the center of attention and all that kind of stuff to, you know what, we're going through this thing together. And so why not give people grace and why not be humble in this situation? And even as I interpret the Bible, it's like, you know what, here's my best understanding of what this means. Here's my best understanding of what this teaches. So I think there's a mind shift that needs to happen there that you don't need to be perfect at all this stuff. You just need to be a human being like the rest of us and be walking on a journey like the rest of us. And I would say the thing you need to be doing is what God wants you to do. Stop worrying about what people want you to do and figure out what angst God has put in your life and fix that and be really good at that. So sorry, that was a long road, but I think there's a foundational, your heart's in the right place, but your attitude needs to change to something different.
I'll give you like a real world example.
Yeah.
So I shared a while back that my dad recently passed away. Mm. So because of that, I have taken a lot of time off of work. Because I'm taking time off work, my responsibilities are falling on other people. So now I'm feeling, I don't want to say guilty, but I'm feeling like I need to get back to work fully to remove that feeling that I have.
Yeah. I get that. I say that's pretty common. That's probably a pretty common feeling. But what I have found is that it almost always, what comes around goes around. There will be times when other people, I know there's been plenty of times when I said, you know what, you're going through a heck of a time right now. Why don't you take care of what you need to? I'll manage your stuff for you right now. And then there's times where I need to have time off and I'm like, look, I just need you to take care of this. So I think that too is just that let's get through this path together and let people do that. They want to do that for you. So that's just a thought. I'm not saying,
yeah.
I mean, I'm not trying to knock any of what anybody's doing. I'm just up here giving answers that I think, not solutions, but answers based on what I think people are asking. So, sure. Right. So
we often hear people say, I'm just trying to find God's will for my life, as if it's floating out there somewhere. What if life right now is God's will? How do you respond to that age old question?
I kind of like the question. I think we just ask God, impart in me what you want me to do. It's not like we're going to go on a treasure hunt, on a quest, and try to find God's will for our life. We can talk to him and say, hey, God, let me know your will for my life. Also, I think sometimes some of our passions and some of the things we're interested in, God says, hey, yeah, you're good at that. Use that. Mm-hmm. Use that for my kingdom. If our foundation is a kingdom laborer, then it doesn't matter kind of what job I'm doing, as long as I'm doing it for the good of, and kind of bringing others to the kingdom. I'm extroverted. I like kind of being in front of people and things. So, hey, yeah, go do that. And I'm going to bless you in that. Or, hey, I smoke really good barbecue meat. It's fantastic. Okay, go use that for the kingdom. Go do those things for the kingdom. Or I love taking care of people. Okay, go be a nurse. But do it with a foundation of a child of mm-hmm. God. So I think whatever intrigues you, you can do that. Now, there are some people who they have a calling on their life. And I think we all have a calling to be children of God. But some people have I'm going to be a pastor. I'm going to be a worship leader. Different things like that as well. But again, at the foundation, we're all in the same. We all have the same job of child of God, kind of kingdom laborer.
Yeah, that's great. I'd say, and Lance did a great job of saying this in the message, is, and here's fundamentally the way I would say it, is God created you, God put in you a purpose, and yes, you do need to find it, but how does that come to you? Now, I'm lucky. I've learned to talk to God, and God has given me some very direct clues about how life, or what I should be doing in life. You may not get that direct of an answer, and the answer is whatever your subconscious is telling you that you've got some angst for or that you're really good at, that's what you should be doing. And people think, like, I've got to have the whole journey mapped out. No, you don't. You just got to take a couple steps, because you know what? Every single plan I make, I get 5 steps down into my plan. I'm like, this plan needs to be adjusted. Let me move a little bit to the right. Oh, this plan needs to be adjusted. So the key is just to step out and do what you feel in your subconscious you're good at, be that an artist or a mom or a technologist or a car repair person or making pizzas. I mean, everybody knows making pizzas is a work of God. So anyway, point is, do it and keep moving. It's all about stepping and moving and adjusting, stepping, moving, and adjusting. There's no final plan. God doesn't give you a ticket to get on the train. You got to go with him, you know? So anyways.
I was thinking, like, God gives you a nudge on something that you should either do or take care of. And for me, that was when I was a kid. There was something that I just never addressed. And I felt like until I became an adult and actually addressed that problem, I couldn't fully understand what God was wanting me to do.
That's awesome.
And then I did it, and it was really, really hard. Yeah. It was one of the hardest things I've ever had to go through, but man, did it change my life and
amazing.
And my friends' lives around me that saw me go through it. It was awesome. So
yeah.
I do feel like that there's probably something holding you back that you need to address in your life.
That's an interesting thing. Fear holds us back, and people are like, fear of what? Well, fear of anything. Fear of change, fear mm-hmm. of not doing what we're doing now, fear of
confrontation.
You know, confrontation, whatever, right? I mean, so I would say in that case, and what you did, if you're fearful and your knees are shaking, then do it with fear and shaking knees and mm-hmm. get it done, right? So it's anyways, we're all sitting around here nodding. You can't see that.
It's good stuff.
Yeah. What is the extended meaning of subdue in God's direction to mankind when making us in his image?
I'm wondering if he's talking about subduing the world. Does that sound like
Yeah.
That, okay. Yeah. Well, we're to subdue the world and use the rich resources of it. And, of course, to not pollute it and do bad things. But, we are put in charge of all things physical on this earth to be used and for God's glory. So that's, I mean, it's that simple of a definition. I know there are some political thoughts one way or the other on it. And I say, should we pollute the earth? No. Is what some people say is polluting the earth really polluting? I don't know. But, you know, generally be a good steward of what God gave us and use it and, mm-hmm. and accomplish God's purpose using the resources that he gave us.
There are some extremes out there.
Yeah.
I can't remember what the religion's actually called, but they won't eat any food that you have to kill the plant to eat it. So like they won't eat a carrot because in order to eat the carrot, you dig up the entire carrot and kill the plant. And so there are religions out there that do take it to that extreme. And I don't think that's God's intention for us.
Right. No.
Right. I mean, Adam was cultivating a garden. So, and he was eating the food of it. So I think that's a stretch.
I will tell you this, whatever purpose God has put in your life, it is moral to fulfill that purpose and to use God's resources to accomplish it. So
what does the line between working for God's glory and overworking ourselves look like?
Well, that's the difference between a good thing and a God thing, right? We all have limited time. We all have limited resources. We have all have limited energy. I know in my work, I have learned to hyper-prioritize my work. In fact, I was just talking to one of the people that work for me today about juggling work. And I said, the key to juggling work is to know what you can let fall on the floor because it's not important. Right. And that's the truth. You can only do so many things. So do what you feel like God's purpose is for you. Or if you don't know what God's purpose is, do what your conscience is telling you you're really good at and do it well and prioritize and don't spread yourself so thin that you're useless would be my advice.
Yeah. What he said.
Go ahead.
No, that's good stuff.
Yeah.
I have a problem disconnecting. I shouldn't say it that way. I have a problem shutting my brain off. So most of my job at this point is in strategy and trying to figure out different ways of doing things or getting a lead over competitors, stuff like that. So a lot of my job now is strategy focused. And so I find myself way into the evenings, waking up in the middle of the night, just thinking of strategy, and I struggle with shutting it off. Any tips?
I think that's like in jobs like we have, that's pretty normal. You don't leave your job at the end of the day, and sometimes the most creative times I have are between 10 o'clock at night and 1 o'clock in the morning, and so I take advantage of those. What I do make sure, though, is that when I'm with my wife on 2 date nights a week, I don't have my phone out and I'm not working. I don't care what emergencies are happening, right? So I do purposely set that stuff away. And when I'm at dinner with the family, I don't have my phone out, right? So you do need to have that line of separation. But whenever you're creative, I work. And that's just the way it is, you know? So,
But answers can come to you no matter what. Whether you're playing Legos with your son or something, you're like, if I do it this way, you may see something completely different. So use that.
Yeah. And write it down.
Right. Yeah.
Write it down so you don't forget it. Yeah.
Write it down. Yeah. But again, I think disconnecting is different than turning it off. So disconnecting is putting the phone in another room, turning your phone off on those important times. But disconnecting may be a little more difficult since you're doing strategy and you're kind of looking for answers anywhere and everywhere. Maybe you're looking up at the clouds and see a unique formation. You're like, okay, that could help me in whatever, I don't know how, but in whatever way. Because you're just looking at things a little differently.
In my dreams often, I mean, I have very vivid dreams and I often get up and write them down. I'm like, what was that trying to tell me? Right. So, and you know, you're in the shower in the morning, you're like, oh, that's the answer. I got it. Then I got to remember it till I get out of the shower and write it down. So when you have when you do creative work, it comes at you like that. And in fact, I'm a trained engineer. I've spent most of my life in IT as an engineer and, people would ask me questions. And I'm like, that is a fantastic question. And I will have a fantastic answer for you tomorrow, but I have to sleep on it first. Yeah. Right. So I can't come up with it off the top of my head. So it just realize how you work. I don't have any problem working whenever you want to work, as long as you make the time clearly for the people who are important in your life and some time for God. I mean, your time for God, obviously, too. But yeah.
Why is it when difficulties arise, many people will call that spiritual warfare or blame the enemy and throw in the towel? What if it's just being human? Do we create more problems for ourselves trying to blame normal parts of life?
I think so. I will agree there's an enemy out there seeking to kill and destroy. However, sometimes I just get in my own way as well. We do live in a fallen world. Things happen. We can't say the earthquake was because of Satan trying to get someone. It's just a natural disaster. And those things happen due to the fall. Like the earth groans. Mm-hmm. It talks about in Genesis, talking about the earth groaning because it's no longer perfect, because a fallen man can't live in a perfect world.
Right.
So I think on some of that, it's just life happening. And ultimately, okay, there's a car accident. Maybe I was driving perfectly, but again, the other person in the car is also a fallen human being as well. So I think sometimes we put more into that. And I think me struggling and me making my own mistakes, the enemy may be like, oh, he's going to mess it up himself enough, rather than I don't need to go technically attack him per se. Mm-hmm. But I'll just fall on my face enough by myself.
Sure.
To sure. Stumble.
Yeah. The reality is that as humans, we do sin and we relish in it. There's a philosopher, it wasn't Aristotle, it's one of the old ones back from that time frame, wrote a book called The Pear. And his dad owned a pear farm, or whatever you call it, and orchard. And he actually broke into another farmer's pear orchard, and they took a bunch of pears and threw up against the wall of the orchard and just reveled in it. It's like we had no need to do that, but man, we sure enjoyed it, you know, right? And so, I mean, as humans, that is like, if you go back and read through the book of Judges, that is a cycle. In God's will, rebelling against God, out of God's will, and being called back to God's will. That's the cycle of human nature. And we don't need Satan to relish in sin. We don't need Satan to rebel. We just want to. And as a matter of fact, if we lived in this perfect world that everybody dreams about, we would break something just so we'd have something to do, right? So, and as a matter of fact, Adam and Eve did. They were so bored with what they did, they found something else to do and broke it. So, you know, we are made as humans to push the rock up the hill. That symbolizes life, and we also greatly relish in sinning. So I don't think we need Satan to blame it on.
So. That's good. I've heard an author say that asking a better question will lead to a better answer or pathway to explore. What if we need to learn to ask better questions about our life and how we show up in the world?
I think we can. And I think we need to always ask questions, whether they be foundational, or even just kind of more intuitive questions, because the more information we know, the better questions you can now ask, because of now you're building that foundation. So I think as we go through life, we can ask better questions and hopefully get more intuitive answers as we ask those questions.
Yeah. The entire political world is filled with very poorly formed questions that there are no real answers to, and they're just complex things that need to be solved. So yes, I absolutely think there's plenty of opportunity for us to sit down and have a think and say, am I even asking the right question, and what question should I be asking? And if you don't know, just ask Jesus. He will help you sort that out. The Holy Spirit will help you sort that out. So
thank you for talking about how we try to compartmentalize life. How do we get away from the binary thinking of sacred and secular? If God made it all, doesn't it all belong? This is our last question, by the way.
Yeah. I think Lance kind of touched on it. He was talking about, okay, it's just music. There's no really, yes, we compartmentalize it into the secular world, into the Christian and the spiritual world. But ultimately, it's just music, right? Yeah, now, some of it's glorifying to God, some of it's not. But music is just music. It's, I think we try to put things in a box that don't necessarily need a box.
Like God can speak to us through anything.
Yeah,
really.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So, I went to a retreat last weekend, Thursday through Sunday, 4 days, a silent retreat, actually. So imagine Keith being silent for 4 days. the last year when I went to this retreat, I really learned to just sit with Jesus and sit with God. And so picture Moses on the mountain saying, hey, I want to see you, God, and Mary sitting at Jesus' feet, putting the expensive perfume on his feet and just spending time with Jesus. And over the last year, I've really had that as a practice to do, but it's always been like a separate time. I went to the same retreat again this year with a different speaker, and it was all about this topic of integrating that sitting with God with work. And in my job too, I did spend a couple hours in the evening doing catching up on things that I needed to for work, but it was just so awesome to sit there and have the presence of God there while I was doing this. And so I think that we just don't have the example. I mean, I always thought of it as a separate thing too, and I'm learning to integrate it more with my work life. So I think it's a matter of being having it aware and at the front of our mind and practicing it and maybe showing our kids how to do it so they can do it easier than we do. So anyways.
Moody, do you have anything else you want to share?
Yeah. So I think as we talk about purpose and job status, that does not end when you retire. And I think we can do even more good for the kingdom even after we retire. Because I know a lot of people, they're like, okay, I'm done with my job. Now I can be done kind of enhancing the kingdom. But that's not true.
Right.
I've seen it done well. Lance has talked about finishing strong. I know Jim Clausen, a member of our church, he's retired, but yet he actually went down to Hawaii and he volunteered for, I think, 3 months as a kind of a maintenance guy at this property where missionaries come and they learn more about how to work with their community. And they're not a pastor, but they, like, when they leave, these missionaries have to, I think, tell the gospel to, like, I want to say, like, 500 different people and kind of spread the word. So Jim retired. He's a maintenance guy at this facility.
Wow.
I've also seen it in my grandfather. My grandfather was on his deathbed, dying of pneumonia, and he was asking every nurse that came into his room, do you know Jesus Christ as your Lord and Savior? And I'm like, what powerful, like, imagery is that? Just,
wow.
Hey, he's finishing strong. He's doing the will of God. And it's not after retirement. He was still trying to further the kingdom on, even in his last kind of breaths that he had. And so again, I just want to reiterate, it doesn't end when you retire or kind of you stop that. Because if your foundation again is a child of God, you're trying to enhance the kingdom or grow the kingdom, like, all the time.
Yeah, that's really, really, really good. Thank you for sharing. Keith, you know what next week's sermon's about?
I don't, actually. We didn't have a meeting this week because Lance is on a trip, so I do not know. I think we are wrapping up this series, though.
All righty. So. Well, that's all we have for today. I'm Joe Padavina.
And I'm Pastor Keith.
And I'm David Moody.
Thanks.